Friday. Armenia warns that deadly clashes with Azerbaijan could escalate into war as the two sides blame each other for the latest border tensions. A surprise national holiday in the UK for the funeral of Queen Elizabeth II creates chaos among the people across the country. This is News. Thanks for joining us. Iran's president is paying a three-day visit to Uzbekistan. In a meeting with his Uzbek counterpart, Ibrahim Raisi says the volume of bilateral trade can be increased by 3 to 4 times.
Considering the two sides well, the volume of trade exchanges between Iran and Uzbekistan, which now stands at $500 million, can be increased by 3 to 4 times in the first stage.
Raisi said that Iran is ready to boost ties with Uzbekistan in various areas, particularly in trade and economic sectors. He said the two sides can also expand cooperation in transportation and energy sectors. The Iranian president said that Tehran-Tashkent relations go beyond regional ties and involve deep cultural bonds. President Shavkat Mirziyoyev, for his part, described as historic Raisi's visit to his country. Two presidents held talks in the city of Samarkand soon after welcoming a ceremony was held upon Raisi's arrival. Following the meeting, the two sides signed 17 cooperation documents in different areas. Iran's president will attend the Shanghai Cooperation Organization Summit on Friday. The UN Human Rights Council's Special Rapporteur has slammed the U.S. unilateral sanctions and the overcompliance with the measures for having negative impacts on populations of sanction-hit countries. Elena Duhan made the remarks during a session of the Security Council on Human Rights. Duhan has noted that overcompliance with unilateral sanctions also hinders the delivery of humanitarian aid to people, urging all states to eliminate or minimize it by any appropriate means. Addressing the session, Iran's top human rights official, Kazem Gharibabadi, has said that the Iranian people are the main victims of the inhumane, unilateral, coercive measures that have been imposed against them by the U.S. He noted that the sanctions have been used as a means of war to commit crimes against humanity, persecution, and genocide against the Iranian nation. John Busnish is a journalist and political consultant joining us from Belgrade. John Busnish, welcome. So Elena Duhan has spoken at the forum and has, in the real sense of what she observed when she was at Iran, delivered her findings and, of course, addressed it to the UN Human Rights Council, along with another country that we caught, and that was Zimbabwe. Now, the thing is, given what she has found, the U.S. is at the center of the unilateral sanctions causing detrimental impact on Iran, including lives. But the real question is, what will the UN do about this? Will anything come out of it holding the U.S. accountable?
Well, let's start from the top. We remember that the American sanctions on Iraq killed an estimated 500,000 children, and the then American Secretary of State, Madeleine Albright, said it was worth it. So that's the mindset of the American officials who are implementing these sanctions. They've had sanctions against Serbia, where I am now. They've had sanctions against Venezuela. They have sanctions against Iran today. And in fact, America goes around the world saying it's pushing for peace. But really what they are is a wolf dressed in the sheep's cloak with big teeth. And the name of those teeth is sanctions. That's their preferred killing method, because through sanctions, they've killed even more people than they killed with an atomic bomb.
Since you've described it that way, a couple things come to mind here. First, it makes me think about the statement she made about exceptions, that the U.S. says there are exceptions. Foodstuff can get in the country. Medicine can get in the country. But he says that that is just a mirage. That's a way of the U.S. whitewashing this whole thing. Is that what the U.S. intention is, to make it appear that there are exceptions, but in essence, it knows that those exceptions don't translate into action and people getting essential either medicine or food or goods?
In any case that the United States can cloak its activities and make them look like they're peace-oriented or that they benefit some private citizens, some civilians, they do it. They have an entire apparatus for propaganda that works 24/7, not just within the government, but within the what we call critics of America's system. The United States likes to cloak its actions in the guise of peacemaking. We know this from multiple cases. The report, for example, today by Alina Duhan was not findable on CNN. The first thing I did when we started discussing this question was to go to CNN and enter her name in the news registry. Not one word. So we've got a report that's already been ignored by the lying mainstream media of the United States, which is, coincidentally, 100% owned by the military-industrial complex. So the only way to have this report reach the ears of normal people inside the United States is through alternative media and through foreign media. And that's why I appreciate the fact that this is being publicized through your media today. Because it doesn't affect only Iran, it affects tens of countries around the world which are unilateral victims of these sanctions. And when we say unilateral, let's take it a step further. The United States imposes sanctions unilaterally, but all of its allies, all of its military colonies are forced to comply with those sanctions because the United States will punish them if they don't tag along behind their leader.
I believe that's called the secondary sanctions. Last question, John Busnich. When we take a look at the whole idea about sanctions, there are plenty of reports out there that show that in order for the U.S. to reach its political objectives, sanctions success rate is pretty low. But aside from that, what is should be more worrying for the U.S. is that when you have, for example, in Iran, people who are dying from not getting their medicine, that reverses or perhaps jolts them into looking at the U.S. as an enemy, not only just in Iran, but for countries that are on the receiving end of U.S. sanctions that have detrimental effects. This, in turn, can turn out to be a danger to U.S.'s national security. Isn't the U.S. worried about that outcome?
The people of the United States are just like you and I, normal people. The key problem here is that the people who run the United States are not normal people. It's a real pity. They do not reflect the normal, everyday citizens of their own country. Most of them are in office because they had big financial backing in their elections from the same people who pushed the sanctions, the military-industrial complex. What is the purpose of the sanctions? The purpose of the sanctions is to attempt to turn the citizens of the target country against their own government. In very few cases do they have any success. Normally what they do is they bind the citizens to the government that they're attacking. They do not understand what they're doing themselves.
Thank you so much, John Busnich, journalist and a political consultant there for Belgrade. Thank you. Moving on, Armenia says Azerbaijan has occupied 10 square kilometers of its territories in recent border clashes. Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan has demanded that Azerbaijani forces leave the area that they have encroached upon. He said the latest annexation adds to the 40 square kilometers of Baku occupied last May. Earlier, Yerevan also warned that the current clashes could turn into a full-blown war. Fighting has been ongoing since late Monday, with both sides trading the blame for the flare-up. Armenia has reported more than 100 deaths. Azerbaijan says it has lost some 50 soldiers. The clashes have been the deadliest since the 2020 war between the two South Caucasus states. Baku says that it wants to establish a corridor through southern Armenia to Azerbaijan's autonomous Nakhchivan bordering Turkey. Pashinyan has rejected the move, saying it is against the truce reached earlier.
The conflict between Azerbaijan and Armenia after a truce has blown up again. About 100 soldiers have died in total. This is the worst fighting between the two since the 2020 war. According to Azerbaijan's president, Ilham Aliyev, provocations committed by Armenian forces at the border have been averted and all necessary objectives were fulfilled. It blamed Armenia for the flare-up. It is widely reported that this conflict is due to the dispute over Nagorno-Karabakh region, in which two wars have been fought between the former Soviet republics of Armenia and Azerbaijan. A quick history check reveals how ethnic Armenian separatists in Nagorno-Karabakh first broke away from Azerbaijan when the Soviet Union collapsed in 1991. The war that broke out afterwards claimed the lives of around 30,000 people. Back in 2020, when another war broke out, which lasted 6 weeks, 6,500 lives were lost. The fighting ended with a Russian-brokered ceasefire. Moscow deployed thousands of peacekeepers in the region to successfully mediate to prevent the war from continuing. The question is, what is behind the most recent flare-up?
Well, that is the key question, isn't it? It's not just, however, about this decades-old Nagorno-Karabakh conflict. Azerbaijan's military operations have different goals, which also impact the interests of Iran, which has close ties with both Baku and Yerevan. For starters, Azerbaijan has geopolitically aligned itself with the West, as well as Israel, and also Turkey. On the other hand, its aim is to separate Nakhchivan, its autonomous area, which connects Iran to Armenia. Iran is against any such plan, and has said that it would not accept any border changes between the two countries.
Azerbaijan needs access to bodies of water in order to provide energy resources to the West, which, given its relationship with Iran, Israel and Western entities would prevent that from happening. Azerbaijan's last 2 years of military action against Armenia is to cut and separate the land route between Iran and Armenia, and the direct access to Nakhchivan from the southern area of Siunak or Zangezur Corridor, a concept for a transport corridor which, if implemented, would give Azerbaijan unimpeded access to Nakhchivan. Meanwhile, Israel, the U.S., Russia, and Turkey do have a hand either directly or indirectly in this conflict, all for their own political objectives. Israel is a supporter of Azerbaijan, and as such has strengthened its relationship, especially when it comes to military equipment like drones. This to have a front against Iran. Meanwhile, Iran has always had a diplomatic approach to the conflict. During the past war, it was very telling what Iran said, that renewed fighting between its neighbors, Azerbaijan and Armenia, could escalate into a wider regional war. And this is where the U.S. may have motives behind seeing a renewed conflict. One intention may be to draw Russia into this war in order to weaken its capabilities in the Ukraine conflict. And the U.S. certainly does not mind if Iran's borders are destabilized, leaving that task to its watchdog in the region, namely Israel. The U.S., however, is presenting another side to this provocation. The U.S. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken has said that Russia may have a hand in this conflict, stirring the pot in order to distract from Russia's most recent losses in Ukraine, according to the U.S. point of view.
People have attended a conference in Gaza to condemn the Oslo peace accords signed back in 1993. The Palestinians consider the accords as a major setback for Palestinians, and even worse than the Balfour Declaration of 1917, which helped create the Israeli regime on the occupied Palestinian land. Beshev Shannon brings us more details.
Palestinians have held a national conference to mark 29 years since the signing of the Oslo Accords. Hundreds of people attended the conference, demanding the cancellation of the agreements. In September 1993, the Palestine Liberation Organization, PLO, signed the Oslo Accords with the Israeli regime on the lawn of the White House in Washington, D.C. Palestinian resistance movement Hamas asserted the failure of the Oslo Accords and called on the Palestinian Authority to withdraw its recognition of the Israeli regime.
As we mark the 29th anniversary of the ill-fated Oslo Accords, we call upon the Palestinian Authority to withdraw from the Oslo Accords and to cancel its recognition of the Israeli regime. Today, we also salute the Palestinian resistance, who managed to liberate the Gaza Strip in 2005. Armed resistance is the key to the liberation of all of Palestine.
The Oslo Accords were meant to resolve the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, but nearly three decades later, Palestinians consider them as a bad chapter in their history. Attendees slammed the Oslo Accords and expressed their support to resistance against the Israeli regime.
The Zionist enemy will never respect any peace agreements and only understands the language of force. We're here to support armed resistance against the Zionist enemy.
Senior officials attending the conference called on all Palestinians to unite their ranks and adhere to armed resistance against the Israeli occupation.
The Oslo Accords were a stab in the back of the Palestinian people. The Zionist regime is a cancer in the region and it must be removed. All forms of resistance must be used against Zionist forces, and armed resistance is the key to defeat the Zionist occupation.
Observers say the Oslo Accords have only brought calamities to Palestinians and have failed to secure the creation of an independent Palestinian state.
29 years on, Palestinians say that peace accords will not free their land, and it's only armed resistance which will help them regain their rights. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
A surprise national holiday in the UK for the funeral of Queen Elizabeth II has created chaos among the people across the country. Authorities declared national mourning after the death of the Queen last week. They've announced a complete shutdown on Monday, the day that she will be laid to rest. The announcement has frustrated ordinary citizens as they face the cancellation of their appointments with doctors and the National Health Service. Many poor Britons are panicked over the closure of food banks. A range of other economic activities are also grinding to a halt. Grocery stores, restaurants, and cinemas and other entertainment would remain closed on the day of the funeral. Air travel is expected to be impacted as well. London's Heathrow Airport has warned of disruption to flights as the Queen's coffin will be carried through the capital. South Korea has warned North Korea against using its nuclear weapons, threatening Pyongyang with a harsh response. Peace activists have criticized the South Korean government, calling for engagement with the neighboring North.
And that is it for World News. Bye-bye for now.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
In the limelight.
Former US President Donald Trump hasn't been interviewed on Rupert Murdoch's Fox News for more than 100 days, and other Republicans often get the attention that Donald Trump once received. The article you're about to hear has been written by the New York Times journalist Jeremy Peters. The piece is titled, Fox News, Once Home to Trump, Now Often Ignores Him. It has been more than 100 days since Donald Trump was interviewed on Fox News. The network, which is owned by Rupert Murdoch and boosted Mr. Trump's ascension from real estate developer and reality television star to the White House, is now often bypassing him in favor of showcasing other Republicans. In the former president's view, according to two people who have spoken to him recently, Fox News's ignoring him is an affront far worse than running stories and commentary that he has complained are too negative. The network is effectively displacing him from his favorite spot, the center of the news cycle. On 22nd of July, as Donald Trump was rallying supporters in Arizona and teasing the possibility of running for president in 2024, saying, "We may have to do it again." Fox News chose not to show the event, the same approach it has taken for nearly all of its rallies this year. Instead, the network aired Laura Ingraham's interview with a possible rival for the 2024 Republican nomination, Governor Ron DeSantis of Florida. It was the first of two primetime interviews that Fox News Channel aired with Ron DeSantis in the span of 5 days. He appeared on Tucker Carlson's show shortly after talking to Laura Ingraham. When Donald Trump spoke to a gathering of conservatives in Washington this week, Fox News did not air the speech. It instead showed a few clips after he was done speaking. That same day, it did broadcast live, for 17 minutes, a speech by former Vice President Mike Pence. Donald Trump has complained recently to aides that even Sean Hannity, his friend of 20 years, doesn't seem to be paying him much attention anymore, one person who spoke to him recalled. The snubs are not coincidental, according to several people close to Rupert Murdoch's Fox Corporation, who spoke on the condition of anonymity to discuss the company's operations. This month, the New York Post and the Wall Street Journal, both of them owned by Rupert Murdoch, published blistering editorials about Donald Trump's actions concerning the 6th of January 2021 riot on the Capitol. The skepticism towards Donald Trump extends to the highest levels of the company, according to two people with knowledge of the thinking of Rupert Murdoch, the chairman, and his son, Lachlan Murdoch, the chief executive. It also reflects concerns that Republicans in Washington, like Senator Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, the minority leader in the Senate, have expressed to the Murdochs about the potential harm that Donald Trump could cause to the Republican Party's chances in the upcoming elections, especially its odds of taking control of the Senate. The Murdochs' discomfort with Donald Trump stems from his refusal to accept his election loss, according to two people familiar with those conversations, and is generally in sync with the views of Republicans like Mitch McConnell, who mostly supported the former president, but long ago said the election was settled and condemned Donald Trump's efforts to overturn it. One person familiar with the Murdochs' thinking said they remained insistent that Fox News had made the right call when its decision desk projected that Joseph R. Biden would win Arizona just after 11 p.m. on the night of the election, a move that infuriated Donald Trump and short-circuited his attempt to prematurely declare victory. This person said Lachlan Murdoch had privately described the decision desk call, which came days before other networks concluded that Donald Trump had lost the state of Arizona, as something only that Fox had the courage and science to do. Some of the people acknowledged that Fox's current approach to Mr. Trump could be temporary. If Donald Trump announces he's running for president or he's indicted, he will warrant more coverage, they said. A spokesman for Mitch McConnell declined to comment. A spokesman for the Fox Corporation also declined to comment, as did a spokeswoman for Donald Trump. The relationship between Donald Trump and the Murdoch media empire has long been complicated. An arrangement of mutual convenience and mistrust that has had sensational ups and downs since Donald Trump first talked himself onto the gossip pages of the New York Post in the 1980s. But the spat between the former president and the media baron who has helped set the Republican Party's agenda for decades, is occurring in a much larger and more fragmented media landscape, as new personalities and platforms make it much harder for any one outlet to change the narrative. Donald Trump's allies in the corners of the conservative media that are more loyal to him, including Breitbart, Newsmax, and Talk Radio, are already seizing on the turn inside Fox News as evidence of a betrayal. Donald Trump appears willing to fight. He blasted Fox and Friends this week on his social media service, Truth Social, for being terrible and having gone to the dark side after one of his hosts had mentioned that Ron DeSantis had beat Donald Trump in two recent opinion polls of a hypothetical 2024 Republican primary contest. Then, offering no evidence, he blamed Paul Ryan, the former Republican Speaker of the House, with whom he often clashed. Paul Ryan sits on the Fox Corporation's board of directors. The New York Post was often on Mr. Trump's side in its editorials when he was president, but it occasionally went against him, like when Donald Trump refused to concede the election in 2020 and the paper's front page headlines blared, "Mr. President, stop this insanity." Donald Trump found a home on Fox News when the network's founder, Roger Ailes, gave him a weekly slot on Fox and Friends in 2011. Mr. Trump used the platform to connect with the budding Tea Party movement as he thrashed establishment Republicans like Paul Ryan and spread a lie about the authenticity of President Barack Obama's birth certificate. Initially, neither Roger Ailes nor Rupert Murdoch thought of Donald Trump as a serious presidential candidate. Roger Ailes told colleagues at the time that he thought Donald Trump was using his 2016 campaign to get a better deal with NBC, which broadcast The Apprentice, according to Insurgency, this reporter's account of Mr. Trump's rise in the GOP. And when Ivanka Trump told Rupert Murdoch over lunch in 2015 that her father intended to run for president, Rupert Murdoch reportedly did not even look up from his soup, according to The Devil's Bargain by Joshua Green. But as Mr. Trump became bigger than any one news outlet and bigger than even his own political party, he was able to turn the tables and rally his supporters against Fox News or any other outlet he felt was too critical of him. He regularly used Twitter to attack Fox personalities like Megyn Kelly, Charles Krauthammer, and Karl Rove. The network could always be critical of him in its news coverage, but now the skepticism comes through louder. In asides from news anchors, in interviews with voters, or in opinion articles for other Murdoch-owned media properties. Referring to the congressional investigation into the 6th of January attack, the Fox anchor Brett Baier said it had made Donald Trump look horrific by detailing how it had taken 187 minutes for him to be persuaded to say anything publicly about the riot. One recent segment on FoxNews.com featured interviews with Trump supporters who were overwhelmingly unenthusiastic about a possible third campaign, saying that they thought his time has passed, and that he was a little too polarizing. Then they offered their thoughts on who should replace Donald Trump on the ticket. Unanimously, they named Ron DeSantis. "I spent 11 years at Fox, and I know nothing pre-taped hits a Fox screen that hasn't been signed off on and sanctioned at the very top levels of management," said Eric Bolling, a former Fox News host who is now with Newsmax, especially when it has to do with a presidential election. There can be no denying that Fox News remains Fox News. Viewers in recent weeks have seen occasionally critical coverage of Donald Trump, but unlike other news networks, Fox has chosen to air its own primetime programming rather than the hearings of the committee investigating the January 6 attack on the Capitol. Tucker Carlson, Sean Hannity, and Laura Ingraham dismissed the hearings as a show trial. "They are lying, and we are not going to help them do it," Tucker Carlson has said. "What we will do instead is to try to tell you the truth." The network has aired the January 6 committee hearings during the day, when far fewer viewers are tuning in. But other segments during the daytime and even evening play up violent crime in Democratic-run cities, or Joe Biden's verbal and physical stumbles. As the government announced that a key indicator of economic health declined last quarter, the headline Fox scrawled across the screen read, "Biden denies recession as U.S. enters recession." On 13th of April this year, Donald Trump called into Sean Hannity's show and ran through a list of crises he claimed would not be happening had we won this election, which we did. He hasn't been interviewed on the Fox News network ever since.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
يا أيها الذين آمنوا, O you who believe, استعينوا بالصبر والصلاة.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is the way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, this is the member you are listening to. May Allah accept your mourning for Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam. Today we invite you to listen to an English lecture by Brother Amin Rastani.
Sallallahu alayka ya Aba Abdullah. These days, for some reason, I'm feeling a lot of Iranian poetry. So I want to start tonight's lecture on this night of Arba'in with this line that says, In Hussein kiist ke alam hamed divaneya oost. In chesham iist ke janha hame parvaneya oost. Imam Hussein alayhi salam has conquered all hearts. After all these years that we are here, sitting in his majlis, after all these years, 1400 years, on an Arba'in night like this. We thank Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. In Hussein Keys, who is this Hussein? This poetry is saying here that who is this Hussein that the whole world, the whole universe is crazy over? Divaneyoust. What a candle this is, this Hussein. Have you noticed when you light a candle, when there's a light on at night, what happens? All the moths and butterflies come around that candle. They might even burn themselves in that candle, but they still will circumambulate around that candle. So it says that, what kind of candle is this? Never seen something like this before. Yeah? Kijanha, the souls, are all the moths and butterflies of this candle. Yes? This fire that is within us, really, that's the best way to describe it. This is a fire in us that love that we have for Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Inshallah, Allah increases that. If we're doing Islamic work, if the ikhlas is not there, we're going to try hard and hard and hard. It's just an uphill battle. Why? Because the barakat is not there. Ikhlas, brothers and sisters. Ikhlas. I don't care what's going on around me. Who said this? What's that? I got to get my work done, inshallah. Hadith number one. أَفْضَلُ الْعَمَلْ مَا أُرِيدَ بِهِ وَجْهُ اللَّهِ. The best of actions is that which is done for Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Okay, well, that was very clear. بالإخلاص يتفاضل مراتب المؤمنين. It is through ikhlas and how much ikhlas people have that there are different degrees of mu'mineen. Oh. تصفية العمل أشد من العمل. To refine and make pure the action is harder than the action. I don't have anyone particular in mind, Arifai. But like, if I'm opening up the door of the center, for example, it's just an example that comes to my mind right now. I'm the one closing the center, for example. I'm the one sitting behind the monitor. I'm the one who's setting up the mic. I'm the one who brings water for Molana, for example. I'm the one who whatever, all right? I better be very careful. Why? Because this, to the point where if it was me, I wouldn't do that action if I'm not sure that I have refined the intention. If I feel like, okay, there's a chance that, let someone else do it. Because tasfiyatul amal ashaddu min al-amal. Tasfiyatul amal ashaddu. It's harder. And if it's harder, then it shows that it's the more important aspect of things as well. But once you get that right, inshallah, do all the khair that you want and you can. Why not? Al-amalul khalis alladhi la turidu an yahmadaka alayhi ahadun illa Allah azza wa jal. This one's nice. The Imam says, or the Ma'asum, he says, you know what? You want to know what amal khalis, pure, refined action is? The one that you are not wishing for anyone to praise you for it. Simple. Kindergarten stuff here. But yes, there will be people who are 7 years old. They're still children. Because this person still looks around to make sure. Did someone see this or not? God forbid. God forbid. I know Allah saw. أخلص قلبك. You know, there are ulama, big scholars, they did big things. And Allah kind of messes with them in a good way. You know what He does? Allah knows this person did it with ikhlas. Allah makes it open to everybody. Because Allah knows if I don't make this public to people, people won't learn. Just like, you know, the story I just told, we talked about. Allah will do ifsha of it and make sure everyone finds out about it. Now this person within themselves, they're very upset that this went out and got out. And people know now. Yeah? But what is it? The thing is, this is very interesting. There was a story, Allama Qadi. They had built like a masjid or something. And like everything's going nice. Allama Qadi, teacher of Ayatollah Bahjat and them. And all of a sudden they see him go grab like a hammer or something. And he comes and he starts breaking something down. Oh, there was they had put a thing there, like a little placard or something there that said that this was under his auspices or something. Broke it down. No, that's not what I'm all about. But sometimes Allah will make it open. Now this person is upset that this happened. But Allah is looking at the bigger picture. He knows this person, their ikhlas won't be tainted. But people need to see this. People need to know this. So yeah, it's all in Allah's hands. What I'm going to do is I'm going to do the amal, I'm going to move on. Time for the next amal. The Quran says, فَإِذَا فَرَغْتَ فَانْصَبْ. O Prophet of Allah, when you're done doing something, what are you supposed to do? If you look at me, I'm probably laying down somewhere resting. But the Quran says, فَإِذَا فَرَغْتَ فَانْصَبْ. Once you're done getting something done, on to the next job. Man, it's like, you hear about the Prophet, and you're like, okay, there's a soft, gentle, lovable character, you know, all that kind of stuff. This guy was a hard worker. If you looked at him and you didn't believe in God, if an atheist looks at him, he's like, man, this guy's one of those successful people that, like these celebrities, like he's always working. The Prophet is always working. فَإِذَا فَرَغْتَ فَانْصَبْ. I got ikhlas, I'm doing work, I'm going to do as much as I can now, inshallah. And the third and last one for tonight, inshallah, is that the movement, what were we talking about again? We were talking about how is it, what is it, what are those little secret elements and ingredients in what Imam Hussein did that it has lasted till today, so I can at least take some inspiration and apply that to my life. This one is not as applicable because we don't have access to our Imam right now, but his movement was one that was led by an imam. And it just highlights how important an imam is. Those people who will say, well, what if Imam Ali had become first Khalifa? There might have been issues as well. Well, we see when an imam leads something, what happens? With Imam Hussein's movement, we see that. And you know why I say this? Because we have other instances and examples where the imam didn't leave the movement, although there were good intentions even, but they failed. Should I list them? Well, you have Abdullah bin Handala or the revolt of Harra a couple years after Ashura. What happened? It was destroyed. Abdullah bin Handala, the son of Handala, Ghasilul Malaika. Abdullah and his sons, his eight sons, were all killed. They revolted against Yazid. Did you know that? Someone else revolted against Yazid, not just Imam Hussein. But that thing was suppressed, destroyed. No one even talks about it too much anymore. And then they attacked Medina and they looted Medina and all the bad stuff that happened. Mukhtar's movement. Okay, Mukhtar, there is a difference of opinion on him, what kind of person he was, all that, whatever. Let's just say he's the best person in the world. But Mukhtar, he didn't get anywhere. Why? Not that he's a bad person, but look, there's a difference between when an imam stands and when others do it. Did it get permission? Did he not get permission? There's a lot of history there. The point being here, we have examples of pious individuals. Zayd ibn Ali ibn al-Husayn ibn Ali ibn Abi Talib. Zayd, son of Imam Sajjad. His movement didn't get anywhere. Yahya, son of Zayd, didn't get anywhere. Husayn ibn Ali, shaheed of Fakh, a Sayyid, a Hashemite. He stood up, didn't get anywhere. One after another, you have these individuals who rose. They got killed the same way Imam Hussein got killed. Their bodies were dealt with kind of similar to the way Imam Hussein's body was dealt with after Ashura. For God's sake, one of them, his name was even Hussein ibn Ali. And in addition to what they did to Imam Hussein, they did to him. In addition to that, you know what else they did? From what I remember, they even burned his body to ashes. Who talks about him? Not that these are bad individuals. No, no, no. I'm trying to make another point here. The question was what? The question was, why is it that Imam Hussein's is different than the rest? Because Imam Hussein's at the top.
Oh, Hussein, you live forever. To Allah, whenever I face troubles in my life, I close my eyes and see your shrine and call the back every time. Oh, Hussein, you're the love of my heart. You are the light of my eyes. I swear to Allah, until my last breath, I will remember Hussein.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
The New York judge overseeing a tax fraud case against the Trump Organization on Monday, 12th of September, rejected any effort to delay next month's trial, acknowledging concerns that the former president, Donald Trump's company, might be trying to stall the criminal case. The judge cautioned against delaying tactics and said, the trial will begin on 24th of October. Please stay with us for more details. ABC News has covered the story and has this to say. It's starting to look like the Trump Organization is trying to stall its upcoming criminal trial in New York until after the midterm elections, a judge said on Monday, 12th of September, during a pre-trial hearing. Former President Donald Trump's family real estate firm is scheduled to start trial on 24th of October for fraud and tax evasion. "We are not delaying the start of the trial," Judge Juan Merchan said on Monday, 12th of September. A prosecutor, Joshua Steinglass, had accused attorneys for the Trump Organization of gamesmanship by failing to disclose the names of expert witnesses the defense will call to testify, as required under the rules of discovery. "The name of the game has been delay," Joshua Steinglass said. Defense attorney Susan Neschels said she was sandbagged by the accusation and explained that the defense's approach to the case had changed after last month's guilty plea by longtime Trump Organization chief financial officer Alan Weisselberg. Weisselberg pleaded guilty last month to all 15 counts in an indictment that accused him of failing to pay taxes on nearly $2 million in fringe benefits the Trump Organization allegedly paid him, off the books. As part of his plea deal, he agreed to testify against the Trump Organization in next month's trial. "We are now restructuring our defense," Susan Neschels said. "This is all a result of Mr. Weisselberg's pleading guilty." The case against the Trump Organization is dramatically strengthened by the guilty plea, Steinglass claimed. The judge gave the defense until next Monday to provide the names of the experts they would call to testify, what they would testify to, and how that testimony is relevant to the case. The judge also told the defense not to make arguments to the jury that imply the company was charged by the Manhattan District Attorney's Office merely because it is owned by the former president. "No selective prosecution," Judge Merchant said, adding he would also preclude arguments at trial that suggest this is a novel prosecution. "Those are not defenses," Judge Merchant said. "I will have very little patience at trial." The trial is expected to last about a month. Alan Weisselberg's plea agreement contains no requirements for a longtime chief financial officer to cooperate in the criminal fraud case against Donald Trump himself, which is separate from the case against the Trump Organization. Reuters news agency has also reported on the same story, but giving us more details. The New York judge overseeing a tax fraud case against the Trump Organization on Monday rejected any effort to delay the trial, acknowledging concerns that former President Donald Trump's company might be trying to stall the criminal case. At a pretrial hearing in a New York state court in Manhattan, Justice Juan Merchan warned against delaying tactics, even as a Trump Organization lawyer said the decision by longtime chief financial officer Alan Weisselberg to plead guilty changed how the defense will present its case. "One of the accusations is the defense is trying to stall," Judge Juan Merchan said. "It's starting to feel that way a little bit. I'm repeating, we are not delaying this trial. It's starting on 24th of October and we're going forward." Prosecutors charged Trump's company and Alan Weisselberg in July 2021 with scheming to defraud, tax fraud, and falsifying business records for awarding off-the-book perks to senior executives. The Trump Organization, which manages golf clubs, hotels, and other real estate around the world, has pleaded not guilty and faces possible fines and other penalties if convicted. Alan Weisselberg initially pleaded not guilty, but changed his plea on 18th of August and agreed to testify, though he is not cooperating with prosecutors' larger probe into Donald Trump himself. His plea agreement calls for a 5-month jail sentence. Judge Juan Merchan also said he will not let the Trump Organization argue to jurors that it was a victim of selective prosecution by the Manhattan District Attorney's Office, now led by Democrat Alvin Bragg. Susan Neschels, a lawyer for the company, said Alan Weisselberg felt he was being targeted because of his ties to the Republican former president. I believe that he will say that he thinks he was targeted because of his association with Donald Trump and pleaded guilty in part from concerns that the targeting would continue and he would be unfairly punished, Neschel said. Susan Neschel also said Alan Weisselberg told prosecutors that no one other than himself and Trump Organization controller Jeffrey McConney, who was immune from prosecution, knew about the tax wrongdoing. He has no knowledge of former President Trump knowing anything about it or any of the other Trumps, Neschel said. Assistant District Attorney Joshua Steinglass disputed her characterization of Weisselberg's discussion with prosecutors. Nicholas Gravanti, a lawyer for Alan Weisselberg, declined to comment. Donald Trump has not been charged or accused of wrongdoing in this case. Outside of the courtroom, Susan Neschel took issue with any suggestion of a stall. The trial is expected to last about 4 weeks. I'm not stalling, Susan Neschel said. I'm ready for trial.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1930 to 2030 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Basing country issues on others is wrong. Pay attention to the domestic capacities. This is the part of the speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the president and members of the cabinet in Imam Khomeini's Husseiniyah on August 30th, 2022. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, praise be to Allah, Lord of the worlds, and peace and blessings be upon our Master, Prophet Muhammad, and upon his pure progeny, particularly the remnant of God on earth. the report we listened to from Mr. Raisi, the Honorable President, and also the rest of the gentlemen whom we have listened to, have been very beneficial. Let us remember our dear martyrs, Martyr Rajai and Martyr Bahonar. These two men were truly and honestly two equal leaders of the Islamic Revolution. Both of them, well, I worked alongside both of them for many years, especially Mr. Bahonar. I knew them and saw them up close in person. The Almighty Allah rewarded them with martyrdom. It would have been truly a pity if these people had died in deaths other than martyrdom. Let us remember them.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Government Week has two functions, one of which is often neglected. I shall talk about both of these functions. The first function of Government Week is the issue of remembering, like remembering Martyr Rajai and Martyr Bahonar, and remembering the event that took place during the revolution. Remembering stands opposite to neglect. It stands opposite to forgetfulness, which in itself is a great disease. Negligence and forgetfulness are great diseases. You can only warn people who follow the remember. You can only warn someone who follows the reminder, the Quran in verse 11, chapter 36. Reminder is the word of dhikr. We have sent down to you a book in which there is an admonition for you. A chapter in the Quran, chapter 21, verse 10. One of the most important issues that religion pursues is the creating awareness in people.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.